Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present Cuba Episode 2, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 5, The 10 Years War, 1868 to 1878. Cuba's First War for Freedom. The Cry for Independence, the Grito de Yara. The dawn of Cuban independence began with a single act of defiance. On October 10, 1868, Carlos Manuel de Cespedes, a wealthy sugar plantation owner in eastern Cuba, stood before a group of his workers, slaves, and allies and declared Cuba's independence from Spain. This momentous declaration, known as the Grito de Yara, signified the start of the 10 Years' War, 1868 to 1878, the first of three major wars that would ultimately lead to Cuban independence. Cespedes, often referred to as the father of the homeland, was a man of immense conviction. He freed his slaves and called upon all Cubans to rise against Spanish rule. The movement, however, was not merely the work of one man. It was the culmination of decades of oppression, economic exploitation, and racial injustices. The war would prove to be a brutal and prolonged struggle, testing the resilience of the Cuban people. The divisions among the Cuban rebels. While the war had begun with a strong sense of unity among the rebels, internal divisions soon emerged. There were three main factions within the Cuban independence movement. The radical revolutionaries, led by Cespedes and other nationalist leaders, they believed in complete independence and were willing to fight for it at any cost. The reformists, a more moderate group that sought political and economic reforms under Spanish rule rather than complete independence. The annexationists, a smaller faction that sought union with the United States, believing that American support was essential to securing freedom from Spain. These ideological differences weakened the movement at times, preventing a unified front against Spanish forces. Nevertheless, the struggle for independence pressed forward. The role of Afro-Cubans in the war. A key aspect of the 10 Years' War was the participation of Afro-Cubans, both free and enslaved. The war presented an opportunity for many black Cubans to fight not only for national liberation, but also for their own personal freedom. Unlike previous struggles that had largely been led by Cuba's white elite, this war saw thousands of formerly enslaved Africans and free blacks joining the revolutionary forces. Some of the most notable Afro-Cuban leaders included Antonio Maceo, who would later become one of the most important figures in Cuba's independence struggle. Maceo and his Mambi soldiers, Afro-Cuban guerrilla fighters, conducted daring attacks against Spanish troops, demonstrating unparalleled military strategy and bravery. Their participation in the war helped to redefine Cuban identity, fostering a stronger sense of racial unity within the independence movement. The Spanish response, brutal repression, and the scorched earth policy. Spain responded to the Cuban rebellion with overwhelming military force. The Spanish forces, under General Blas Vilate, Count of Valmaseda, enacted brutal policies to suppress the revolution. These included mass executions of suspected rebels, widespread imprisonment and torture, the destruction of villages suspected of supporting the revolution, the infamous scorched earth policy, where entire towns and plantations were burned to the ground to prevent them from supplying rebel forces. Despite these harsh tactics, the Cuban rebels persisted. The war turned into a prolonged conflict, with guerrilla warfare becoming the primary method of fighting. The rebels relied on the island's dense forests and mountains to launch surprise attacks on Spanish troops, making it difficult for the well-equipped but rigid Spanish army to achieve victory. Women in the Cuban struggle for independence. Women played a significant role in the 10 Years' War, both on and off the battlefield. Many Cuban women actively participated as combatants, spies, and nurses. Some of the most notable female figures included Mariana Grajales, the mother of Antonio Maceo, who became a symbol of resistance and sacrifice. Anna Betancourt, an outspoken advocate for women's rights who fought alongside the revolutionaries and argued that Cuban independence should also mean gender equality. Brigadier Rosa Castellanos, known as La Biamisa, who led rebel forces and treated the wounded on the battlefield. These women defied traditional roles, proving that the fight for independence was a collective effort that transcended gender barriers. Foreign involvement and the influence of the United States. The conflict in Cuba did not go unnoticed by the international community. The United States, though officially neutral, played a complicated role in the war. While American businesses had significant economic interests in Cuba, many Americans sympathized with the Cuban cause. Some private citizens even smuggled weapons and supplies to the rebels. Additionally, American newspapers covered the war extensively, portraying the Cuban rebels as freedom fighters against colonial oppression. This would later lay the groundwork for increased U.S. involvement in Cuban affairs at the end of the century. The Pact of Zanjan, a temporary end to the war. By 1878, after a decade of intense fighting, both sides were exhausted. The Cuban rebels, despite their bravery, were facing severe shortages of food, weapons, and supplies. Meanwhile, Spain was struggling with financial problems and ongoing unrest in other parts of its empire. On February 10, 1878, the Pact of Zanjan was signed, officially ending the 10 Years' War. The terms of the treaty included a general amnesty for Cuban rebels, a promise of political reforms, including limited autonomy for Cuba, the gradual abolition of slavery. However, the pact did not grant Cuba full independence, nor did it fully abolish slavery, leading to dissatisfaction among many Cuban revolutionaries. Antonio Maceo, for example, refused to accept the terms and continued to fight in what became known as the Little War, 1879 to 1880, though it ultimately failed. The aftermath and the road to further rebellion. The 10 Years' War was a costly and devastating conflict that ultimately failed to achieve its primary goal of Cuban independence. However, it was far from a total failure. The war laid the foundation for future independence movements, inspiring a new generation of Cuban revolutionaries. Weakened Spanish authority, forcing Spain to make some concessions and reforms. Strengthened Cuban nationalism, uniting different racial and social groups under a shared vision of a free Cuba. As the 19th century continued, it became clear that the dream of Cuban independence would not die. The struggles of Céspedes, Maceo, Grajales, and countless others would serve as inspiration for the next great revolution that would take place just a few years later. Chapter 6. The Final War for Independence, 1895 to 1898. The Road to Revolution. Following the failure of the 10 Years' War, 1868 to 1878, and the short-lived Little War, 1879 to 1880, Cuba remained under Spanish colonial rule. Although Spain had promised reforms and greater autonomy for Cuba, those promises largely remained unfulfilled. The frustration among Cubans continued to grow, and by the 1890s, a new generation of revolutionaries emerged, ready to launch yet another fight for independence. One of the most influential figures of this new movement was José Martí, a poet, journalist, and political theorist. Martí had spent years in exile in the United States, where he tirelessly campaigned for Cuban independence, uniting exiled Cubans and securing funds for the revolutionary cause. His vision was not only to free Cuba from Spanish rule, but also to establish a just and independent republic free from foreign domination, particularly from the United States. The outbreak of war. The Cuban War of Independence officially began on February 24, 1895, with the Grito de Bear, a coordinated uprising across the island. Cuban insurgents, known as the Mombases, took up arms once again, led by military strategists such as Máximo Gómez, Antonio Maceo, and Calixto García. Unlike previous wars, this one had a well-organized plan, and the revolutionary leadership was determined to avoid the mistakes of past conflicts. The Spanish response was swift and brutal. Martí, eager to take part in the fight, landed in Cuba in April 1895. However, tragedy struck soon after. On May 19, 1895, Martí was killed in battle at Dos Rios, becoming a martyr for the Cuban cause. Despite this devastating loss, the war intensified as rebel forces continued their guerrilla tactics, targeting Spanish supply lines, railways, and fortifications. The strategy of the Mombases. The Cuban revolutionaries, though vastly outnumbered and outgunned, relied on a combination of guerrilla warfare and scorched earth tactics. Máximo Gómez, a seasoned general, implemented a strategy known as La T Incendiaria, the burning torch, in which Cuban forces burned sugar plantations and infrastructure to disrupt Spanish economic interests. This strategy not only weakened Spain's control, but also demonstrated to plantation owners that Spanish rule could not protect their interests. Antonio Maceo, known as the Bronze Titan, was instrumental in leading daring military campaigns. His invasion of the West, 1895 to 1896, was one of the most remarkable military achievements of the war, as Maceo and his troops traversed the entire island, bringing the war deep into Spanish-controlled territory. The Spanish response, the reconcentration policy. Spain, recognizing the growing strength of the Cuban insurgents, appointed General Valeriano Weyler as governor in 1896. Weyler introduced a brutal policy known as reconcentration, forcing rural Cuban populations into concentration camps to cut off support for the rebels. These camps became sites of immense suffering, with disease and starvation claiming the lives of thousands of civilians. Weyler's tactics drew widespread condemnation, particularly from the United States, whose newspapers reported on the horrors of Spanish rule with exaggerated and sensationalized stories, a practice known as yellow journalism. The American public became increasingly sympathetic to the Cuban cause, pressuring the U.S. government to intervene. U.S. involvement and the USS Maine. Although the Cuban revolutionaries had made significant gains, Spain still retained military superiority. However, external factors soon changed the course of the war. The United States had significant economic interests in Cuba and was concerned about instability in the region. On February 15, 1898, the USS Maine, an American battleship docked in Havana Harbor, exploded, killing over 260 U.S. sailors. The cause of the explosion remains debated, but at the time, U.S. newspapers blamed Spain, fueling public outrage. The rallying cry, "Remember the Maine! To hell with Spain!" spread across the country, and within months, the United States declared war on Spain. The Spanish-American War and Cuba's final push. With the United States entering the conflict in April 1898, the war reached its final stage. American forces, alongside Cuban revolutionaries, launched military campaigns to drive the Spanish out. Key battles, such as the Battle of Santiago de Cuba, saw combined Cuban and American efforts dismantle Spanish resistance. One of the most famous engagements was the Battle of San Juan Hill on July 1, 1898, where U.S. forces, including the Rough Riders led by Theodore Roosevelt, secured a decisive victory. Meanwhile, the Spanish Navy was decisively defeated in the Battle of Santiago Bay, sealing Spain's fate in the Caribbean. The Treaty of Paris and the aftermath. On December 10, 1898, the Treaty of Paris was signed, officially ending the war. Spain relinquished control of Cuba, but instead of immediate independence, the island fell under U.S. military occupation. The Cuban revolutionaries, who had fought for their sovereignty, were sidelined in negotiations. The Platt Amendment, imposed by the United States in 1901, restricted Cuba's sovereignty, allowing the U.S. to intervene in Cuban affairs and maintain a naval base at Guantanamo Bay. Conclusion: a hollow victory. The Cuban War of Independence achieved its primary goal of ending Spanish rule, but the island's struggle for true independence was far from over. While the Spanish flag no longer flew over Havana, the United States quickly established itself as the new dominant power on the island. Many Cuban leaders viewed this as a betrayal, recognizing that their fight for liberty had merely shifted their dependence from one empire to another. Chapter 7: Under the Eagle's Shadow, U.S. Occupation and Republic, 1898-1933. The aftermath of the war, a nation in limbo. Cuba's long-fought war for independence from Spain ended in 1898, but true sovereignty remained elusive. With the signing of the Treaty of Paris on December 10, 1898, Spain formally ceded Cuba, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Philippines to the United States. The Cuban revolutionaries, who had fought for their nation's freedom, were notably absent from the negotiations, a bitter foreshadowing of what lay ahead. The United States occupied Cuba from 1899 to 1902, under the guise of ensuring stability and establishing a functioning government. However, instead of granting immediate independence, the U.S. exerted significant influence over the island's political and economic landscape, ensuring that its own interests remained protected. This chapter explores the profound and complex impact of U.S. occupation, the birth of the Cuban Republic, and the turbulent early decades of Cuban self-rule. The U.S. military government, 1899 to 1902. The American military occupation of Cuba was initially justified as a period of transition, meant to prepare Cuba for eventual self-governance. Under General Leonard Wood, the U.S. established order, rebuilt infrastructure, and introduced reforms in education and sanitation. Yellow fever, which had devastated Cuban and foreign troops alike during the wars, was significantly reduced thanks to the efforts of Dr. Carlos Finley, a Cuban physician whose theories on mosquito transmission were validated through U.S. intervention. Despite these improvements, many Cubans viewed the occupation with deep suspicion. The revolutionaries had fought for independence, not a replacement colonial authority. U.S. businesses quickly took advantage of the situation, securing economic dominance over Cuban sugar, tobacco, and infrastructure. The Cuban people, already exhausted from war, now faced a different form of subjugation, one dictated by economic leverage rather than military conquest. The Platt Amendment, a chain on Cuban sovereignty, 1901. As Cuba prepared for nominal independence, the U.S. ensured it would maintain control over the island's future. In 1901, the Platt Amendment was introduced, imposing severe restrictions on Cuba's sovereignty. The amendment, which was incorporated into the new Cuban Constitution of 1901, mandated the following. Cuba could not enter treaties that compromised its independence without U.S. approval. The United States had the right to intervene in Cuban affairs to preserve stability and order. The U.S. was granted control over land for naval bases, leading to the establishment of Guantanamo Bay Naval Base, a presence that persists to this day. Cuban nationalists fiercely opposed the amendment, but U.S. officials made it clear. Without its inclusion, Cuba would not be granted formal independence. Under immense pressure, Cuba reluctantly accepted these terms, and on May 20, 1902, the Republic of Cuba was officially proclaimed, with Tomas Estrada Palma as its first president. However, true independence remained compromised. The early Cuban Republic, a puppet of the U.S., 1902 to 1933. Estrada Palma's presidency set the tone for a turbulent period in Cuban politics. Though he was a respected revolutionary figure, his administration was marred by allegations of corruption and favoritism toward U.S. interests. When he sought re-election in 1906, accusations of electoral fraud led to a rebellion. The United States intervened once again, sending troops to occupy Cuba from 1906 to 1909 in what was termed the Second Occupation of Cuba. This pattern of instability and U.S. intervention continued in the following decades. Cuban leaders struggled to balance nationalist aspirations with the economic and political dominance of their northern neighbor. Key developments included the sugar boom and bust. The early 20th century saw a dramatic expansion of the Cuban sugar industry, largely controlled by U.S. corporations. Cuba became deeply reliant on sugar exports, creating an economy that was vulnerable to the fluctuations of the American market. The 1912 race war. The Independent Party of Color, founded by Afro-Cuban veterans of the Wars for Independence, sought greater political representation and racial equality. However, the Cuban government, fearing unrest, violently suppressed the movement, culminating in the massacre of 1912, in which thousands of black Cubans were killed. The rise of political corruption. Successive Cuban administrations were plagued by corruption, cronyism, and political violence. The presidency of Gerardo Machado, 1925 to 1933, was particularly authoritarian, leading to widespread opposition and eventual U.S.-backed intervention. Growing anti-U.S. sentiment and the path to revolution. As the decades progressed, resentment toward U.S. influence in Cuban affairs intensified. While the United States justified its actions as ensuring stability, many Cubans saw them as blatant imperialism. Nationalist movements gained momentum, led by figures like Julio Antonio Mella, a young Marxist revolutionary who founded the Cuban Communist Party in 1925. His assassination in 1929, widely believed to have been orchestrated by the Cuban government, only fueled further discontent. The Great Depression, 1929 to 1939, hit Cuba's economy hard, further exposing its dependency on the United States. With sugar prices plummeting and unemployment soaring, opposition to Machado's rule grew fierce. Students, labor unions, and revolutionary groups took to the streets in mass protests. By 1933, the situation had reached a breaking point. The fall of Machado and the rise of new revolutionary forces, 1933. In August 1933, under mounting pressure from both domestic opposition and the United States, Gerardo Machado was forced to resign. His departure marked the end of an era of overt U.S. control, but also signaled the beginning of new power struggles within Cuba. A short-lived provisional government, led by Ramón Grau San Martín, attempted to implement nationalist reforms, including repealing the Platt Amendment. However, the U.S. refused to recognize Grau's government, supporting instead a young military officer named Fulgencio Batista. Batista would soon emerge as the dominant force in Cuban politics, shaping the island's future for the next two decades. Conclusion: the seeds of future revolutions. Cuba's early years as a republic were marked by foreign control, economic dependence, and internal unrest. The dreams of true independence that had inspired the wars against Spain remained largely unfulfilled. The Platt Amendment had kept Cuba in the shadow of the United States, and successive governments struggled with corruption and political instability. However, the growing nationalist movements, the economic struggles of the Great Depression, and the fall of Machado all set the stage for further revolts. While the U.S. would continue to exert influence, the seeds of a future revolution were already beginning to take root. In the next chapter, we will explore the rise of Fulgencio Batista, the further entrenchment of U.S. economic interests, and the growing revolutionary fervor that would eventually lead to the Cuban Revolution of 1959. Chapter 8: Batista's Cuba, Wealth, Poverty, and Mafia Ties, 1933-1959. The rise of Fulgencio Batista. Following the fall of Gerardo Machado in 1933, Cuba entered a period of political instability. Amidst this turmoil, a young military officer named Fulgencio Batista began his ascent to power. Initially a sergeant in the Cuban army, Batista rose to prominence during the Sergeants' Revolt, an uprising that overthrew the provisional government and positioned him as the de facto leader of Cuba's military and politics. Between 1933 and 1940, Batista ruled Cuba through a series of puppet governments, pulling the strings from behind the scenes. However, in 1940, he transitioned from military strongman to elected president, capitalizing on his image as a man of the people. His first term was marked by progressive reforms, including the introduction of a new Cuban constitution, 1940, which promised social and economic rights. Yet, his presidency was also characterized by growing ties to American business interests, which would shape Cuba's economy for decades to come. The Golden Age and the rise of corruption. Following Batista's departure from office in 1944, Cuba experienced what some historians refer to as a golden age. With its booming sugar industry and lucrative tourism sector, Havana became a glamorous hotspot for American tourists, celebrities, and businessmen. However, this prosperity masked deep social inequalities. During this time, U.S. corporations dominated Cuban industries, controlling over 70% of the island's sugar production. The influx of American investment created an economy heavily dependent on U.S. trade policies, leaving the Cuban people vulnerable to economic downturns. Meanwhile, Havana's nightlife flourished, fueled by an expanding entertainment and gambling industry. Behind the scenes, the influence of the American mafia grew, embedding itself within Cuba's tourism sector, casinos, and even political structures. The mafia connection. The post-World War II years saw an increased involvement of American organized crime in Cuba. Under Batista's leadership, Havana became known as the Las Vegas of the Caribbean, a paradise of gambling, luxury hotels, and illicit activities. Mafia figures such as Meyer Lansky, Lucky Luciano, and Santo Trafficante Jr. were welcomed by Batista, who saw them as essential partners in Cuba's growing casino industry. The Cuban government not only tolerated but actively facilitated mafia operations in exchange for financial kickbacks. Batista personally profited from the growing vice industry, ensuring that his government turned a blind eye to criminal activities. The Havana Conference of 1946, attended by some of the most powerful crime bosses in the United States, solidified Cuba's status as a mafia playground. The mob's money laundering networks ran deep, influencing hotel investments, drug trafficking, and political campaigns. The Return of Batista and the Consolidation of Power, 1952-1959. After spending years in exile in Florida, Batista returned to Cuban politics in 1952 under the banner of economic stability and law and order. However, faced with low popularity and the likelihood of losing the presidential election, Batista staged a military coup on March 10, 1952, seizing power and dissolving constitutional rule. This second period of Batista's rule marked a sharp departure from his earlier presidency. The promise of reform and democracy faded, replaced by a brutal dictatorship characterized by political repression, widespread censorship, imprisonment of dissidents, and suppression of opposition movements. Economic disparity. While Cuba's elite and foreign investors thrived, the majority of the population remained impoverished. Increased mafia control. Corruption within the government allowed organized crime to flourish unchecked. Opposition from revolutionary groups. The rise of student protests, radical leftist movements, and guerrilla factions who opposed Batista's regime. The growing resistance and the seeds of revolution. By the mid-1950s, dissatisfaction with Batista's government had reached a boiling point. While Havana's wealthy elite enjoyed extravagant lifestyles, the working class and rural populations suffered under economic stagnation and lack of political representation. Several resistance movements began to form, led by figures who would soon become central to Cuba's future. Fidel Castro, a young lawyer and activist who, after leading a failed attack on the Moncada barracks, 1953, was imprisoned and later exiled to Mexico. Che Guevara, an Argentine revolutionary who would join Castro in Mexico and play a crucial role in the guerrilla movement. Frank Pace, a leader of urban resistance movements, particularly in Santiago de Cuba. The 26th of July movement, named after the date of Castro's failed Moncada assault, this revolutionary group would become the core of the anti-Batista struggle. As violence between government forces and insurgents escalated, Batista responded with increased brutality. Executions, disappearances, and mass arrests became common, further alienating the Cuban people from his regime. The U.S. and Batista, a strained relationship. Despite Batista's close ties to American business and organized crime, the U.S. government began distancing itself from his administration. By 1958, as reports of Batista's human rights violations grew, the Eisenhower administration began imposing arms embargoes and limiting diplomatic support. The CIA, recognizing the inevitable collapse of the regime, explored alternative leadership options, but struggled to find a viable replacement for Batista. As the revolutionaries gained ground in the countryside, Batista's forces found themselves stretched thin. Corruption and low morale plagued the Cuban military, and by the end of 1958, it became clear that Batista's rule was unsustainable. The fall of Batista and the victory of the Cuban Revolution, 1959. On January 1, 1959, Batista fled Cuba, escaping to the Dominican Republic before seeking asylum in Portugal and later Spain. His departure marked the end of an era, but the beginning of another transformative chapter in Cuban history. As Batista's government collapsed, Fidel Castro's forces entered Havana, greeted by jubilant crowds who saw the revolution as a new dawn for Cuba. The Cuban Revolution had succeeded, but the nation now faced new challenges, transforming its economy, redefining its identity, and navigating the geopolitical tensions of the Cold War. Conclusion: a nation at a crossroads. Batista's rule, spanning decades, was a time of paradoxes. Economic prosperity for some, crushing poverty for others. Rapid modernization alongside deepening corruption, and a government propped up by foreign interests yet disconnected from its own people. His fall marked the end of Cuba's old order, but the country's future under Castro would prove just as complex and contentious. In the next chapter, we will explore the Cuban Revolution, 1959-1965, the radical transformations introduced by Fidel Castro, and Cuba's emergence as a key player in Cold War geopolitics.